Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Today we're going to touch on a topic that we haven't really covered too much before. We're going to talk about the issue of crises and how we respond to crises, and we typically do that by calling 911.
Right. There are two issues. To me, there were two issues here. Mm-hmm. One is the whole Black Lives Matter issue.
Right.
That's not what we're going to talk about, but we're going to talk about the murders, the unfortunate murders that led to the Black Lives Matter.
Right.
Innocent people being killed. We're not going to talk about Black Lives Matter. We're going to talk about the 911 response system.
Right.
Okay. And it's something we've never really discussed this before.
Right.
But the second reason it's important is because if you call a psychologist or psychiatrist, one of the things you will always hear, or even an agency, they will say, if this is a crisis, call 911.
Right.
The problem in calling 911 is you're calling an emergency number that they're going to send the police or the fire department. And if they send the police have the mindset, as they should, that there's imminent danger here. Okay.
Right.
But if it's a 911 call for mental health reasons, police are walking into something that they're not expecting.
Right.
So it's not their fault.
Right.
They're walking into a completely different situation.
Right.
Police are trained to deal with lethal emergencies.
Right.
Most are not trained to deal with mental health issues, nor should we expect them to be.
Right.
So the 911 issue, there are two issues here. One is we all use it on our phone messages, call 911 if this is an emergency. But it's also we're calling up highly aroused legal officers of the law.
Right. And we'll say that the reason that you mentioned Black Lives Matter to begin with, not because mental health crises or 911 automatically is connected to Black Lives Matter, but it's because in the article that we have linked in the show notes, they kind of use that as a frame, some of the issues.
The example.
As an example for some of the discussions that the author is making and that we're going to talk about here. So again, we're not talking about those specifics, but we're going to talk about sort of the general idea of, you know, when you need help, when you need assistance, what to expect, but also, you know, what are some of the other avenues that we can travel to deal with some of these issues.
That's right, because the specific example they gave, I remember this, I remember the news story when it happened, and a very unfortunate set of circumstances where a young man was home on vacation. He was home for winter break or Christmas vacation, and he had already called 911 a couple of times.
Right.
The young man had. And then the whole thing disintegrated into a family dispute. Then the father called. Well, it ended up that the boy and another woman were both killed because by the time the police got there, it looked like a violent episode evolving. And so they dealt with it as a violent episode. Sadly, it turned out that it was a mental health issue.
Right.
But nobody knew that until later.
Right.
And so that's the specific example that he gave about.
Right.
And I have to say, we hear this call, if it's an emergency, call 911. And it's just one of those things that we don't typically think about, this other aspect of calling 911. I confess, I never thought about it, that we're calling an emergency squad out, you know, and it might be a mental health issue.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that, you know, if you've never called 911, you know, they do ask what type of emergency is it.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on what's going on at the time, you may or may not be able to communicate that very well. And depending on sort of your location and all of that, the first responders may be medical professionals, or they could be
law enforcement, or it could be firefighters. It could be lots of different, a couple of different groups of first responders.
Because if the 911 call comes in, and it's a panicked individual, man or woman, say, and my son has a gun, or he has a knife, or he's attacking
other family. Threatening to hurt himself.
You know, you send the police in, because you don't want to send a mental health worker in who's not trained to deal with those kind of situations.
Well, when I, you know, early in my post-high school training, I went through emergency medical training.
Right.
And I know your son has gone through emergency medical training. And they... We do not, you know, in that line of work, I shouldn't include myself because I don't really do that. But they are not allowed to go on scene until the police verify that it's safe, especially if there's concern about a violent individual.
You can't send a social worker into a violent scenario like that, a violent event. It just would be irresponsible and unconscionable that, you know, you'd walk in. I wouldn't want to walk in unless I knew what was going on, you know. And all these decisions have to be made very quickly, almost intuitively.
Right.
Okay, so we don't blame anybody for anything. These are difficult circumstances for everybody.
Absolutely. So, nonetheless, you know, we are obligated professionally, legally, you know, to encourage a person to, you know, call for emergency support or get to an emergency room as quickly as possible in the event of a mental health crisis.
Right.
And, you know, I like the discussion that the author has in this article because it is an important discussion to consider as it relates to what happens when you call 911. And it, as we've been talking, it's important to realize that what will happen is that law enforcement will show up and you know, fire department will likely show up and depending on where you live, and as will you know, medical professionals, EMTs and paramedics and things like that. So it's not like you're calling, you know, if you call 911, it's not like you're calling and you're going to talk to somebody and they're going to say, give you some words of advice and say, hey, why don't you go ahead and get to the emergency room? They're not going to do that. They're going to send somebody to check on you.
That's right. And the 911 operators, remember, they're like air traffic controllers.
Right.
I mean, they're not sitting there. They're getting calls all day long, and they're responding, and they don't have all the information.
And they're not mental health professionals.
No, no, they're not trained to do any of this stuff.
They're trained to what you call triage.
Triage,
And so they determine how much of a risk it is, so that they know how many people to send.
Who to send? You know, is it a fire or is it a violent? Is it violence? Is it a fire? And you're trying to determine that from a panicked caller on the other end of the line who might not be getting everything straight.
Right. Right.
So again, you can't blame the 911 operators because they're working at a disadvantage as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we, despite all of this, of course, we still, you know, encourage individuals, encourage patients and people in general to call 911 in the event of an emergency or to get to an emergency room as quickly as possible. But you know, I think one of the things that I think we should certainly mention is when you call 911 and they're coming to help, or if you go to the emergency department and you're in a mental health crisis, it's important that you recognize that you will likely be evaluated and assessed if a police officer and emergency department comes to your home to check on you because of a phone call, there's a high probability that they're going to transport you to the hospital with your will or against your will, with your permission or against your permission.
That's right.
And that's because, again, their responsibility is to make sure that you're safe and that you're not going to hurt yourself or hurt anybody else. And so if it, in their view, in their opinion, if it looks as though there's a risk for harm, they're going to take you to the hospital.
A harm to yourself or to others.
Or to others. Right. And in Florida, we call that the Baker Act.
It's Baker Act in Florida.
And it's, you know, they take you to the hospital, then, you know, medical professionals there in the emergency department will evaluate to determine whether or not you need to be formally Baker acted and kept at the hospital, or if, you know, we're just dealing with, you know, just an issue that you can just kind of calm down there in the emergency department, then you can go home. But oftentimes, even the individuals in the emergency department, the medical professionals in the emergency department that see you, don't necessarily have mental health training.
That's right. If you're dealing just with an ER, especially if you're in a small community.
Right.
I mean, if you're in a large city, the larger hospitals
have
psychiatric personnel, psychologists and psychiatrists, psychiatric nurses and social workers on staff who deal with these kinds of emergencies. But if you're in a small community somewhere, you're not going to get that sort of psychiatric care in an emergency room.
Right.
You might get it eventually, but you're not going to get it in that first day.
Right. Yeah. So. You'll end up being admitted, and then you know, you will hopefully see a psychiatrist within the you know, by the next morning or something like that.
Right.
So it's important that you know that. And that's not meant to discourage you from calling 911 if you need to.
It's all the problem is it's all we have.
Right.
Okay. In our system, it's the only service that exists, sadly. And again, he mentions in the article about, you know, with cities reducing when people talk about cutting taxes and reducing expenditures, these are the sorts of things that get cut.
Right.
They're considered expendable for some reason, I guess, because not just a small number of people use them.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's the problem, is that all of these kind of city services are underfunded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is the, given the economic realities, this is the best we can do, is 911. Mm-hmm. But for professionals, I think, for me, as a professional, it was a reminder that when I'm dealing with families who might have this crisis, to advise them.
Right.
Now, when you call 911, be very clear about what you're dealing with, so that the right people come.
Right.
So there's a professional obligation here too, of knowing what happens when people dial 911.
Right. Right. Now, two more quick things.
Mm-hmm.
One is, there are times, and this is, I think, one of the places where calling for support from emergency professionals sort of takes a negative skew from a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that is when there are times when people make calls to 911 or to, you know, even to the non-emergency line for help or for advice or for strategies for dealing with something that, because it's in the evening and there's nobody else open, or you know, there's something else going on, and or they just feel as though they need to support it. You know, I've heard of people who, you know, call to report something to the non-emergency police line because of bullying situations or because of assault situations, and you know, their kid was bullied at school, and so the kid is at home and kind of distressed and maybe you know, engaging in some self-harm or something like that. And so they call the police and they say, hey, look, just wanted to let you know that my kid is being bullied, and we're informed that, you know, we're supposed to report bullying whenever it happens, and, you know, the police will come out and take a report. And I've heard of people in those situations where the kid, because they've been engaging in self-harm, that they will be taken to the hospital and Baker acted.
Because they're engaging in self-harm.
Because they're engaging in self-harm. And they're... And that, to me, is where there's this really fine line between, you know, is a person a danger to themselves, a true danger to themselves from the perspective that they're going to really do harm or even, you know, kill themselves, go to an extent to end their life, versus someone who is engaging in self-harm as a maladaptive coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And we've done some podcasts in the past about self-harm and that kind of thing. But it's important that you know that could happen. And all of that leads to the second point, the second maybe final point that we need to make, and that is prevention is the best and most important thing that we can do. Mm-hmm. If you have a loved one or you yourself are struggling in any way, I would encourage you not to wait, and let's wait until through the rest of the day and see how it works out. Because invariably what will happen is, as the evening comes and you know everybody's closed, all the offices are closed, your therapist has gone home for the day, or you know, the whatever, and your symptoms worsen, you're going to need now acute help. It goes from maybe needing a little bit of support to hold off until you can get into the next appointment to it goes from that to now it's an emergency and I need help right now.
The chances of you needing help at 11 o'clock in the morning are pretty close to zero.
Right.
You know, these things happen at night or in the early morning. You know, whoever got the flu at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, you get it at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
You know? So, and the same with these. A leaky faucet isn't going to correct itself.
Right.
You know, don't wait until the flood.
Yeah. You know? So if you feel any of those symptoms, or you feel any distress, or you have a loved one who is experiencing some distress, go ahead and call a mental health professional and talk with them and see what you can do. There are crisis hotlines.
Right.
There are lots of resources in most communities, not in all communities, admittedly, but you know, in the very least, there's some things online and phone calls and stuff like that you can make.
If your instincts tell you that things are headed in a bad direction, I would act on them.
Right.
You know, prevent the crisis. And there are non-emergency numbers that you can call. And I would always encourage people to call before the crisis strikes.
Right.
If you think something bad is going to happen, head it off.
Right.
You know, call the non-emergency number and get some help.
Absolutely. So, all right.
Good. Yeah. All right. This was good. I'm glad we found this one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that is it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We'd be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning. Thank you.